south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander...
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
Now, here's an interesting email from Josh. Josh, kind of interesting. There are lots of guys named Josh out there these days. When I was a kid going to school, grade school, middle school, high school. Actually, I went to junior high. There was no middle school. That shows my age, right? There were no Joshes, zero Joshes. Never even heard the name. Except the full name in a Bible, Joshua. Because, you know, going to Catholic school, we had to read that thing, you know, over and over again. Nope, when I was growing up, there were no Kyles, no Joshes, no Devons. Lots and lots of Daves, though. Anyway, Josh says, Johnny, I've been living in Central America for 3 years now. Originally from Minneapolis, Minnesota, I spent some time in Mexico. Beautiful country, but a complete narco state. Spent a year in Guatemala, beautiful country, but had a big falling out with my girlfriend, who was also from Minneapolis. We came down together. Long story short, she cheated on me with a Latin lover type. And I'm one of those guys who needs to get a complete fresh start when something bad like that happens. So for the last year or so, I've been in El Salvador. Really like it here too, except for one thing, the weather. It's way too hot. Guatemala had perfect weather. Once you've experienced living in the Altiplano, you just get spoiled. He says, though there is a tiny bit of Altiplano in El Salvador, the part that's connected at the border with Guatemala. It could be a great place to live, except it's not near any big city, so you're kind of stuck out in the boonies. And I'm not that kind of guy. I'm a city boy. Anyhow, Johnny, after living in Central America for 3+ years now, I have a few tips to offer and a few questions, too. Questions first. Why is it that countries with harsh winters, like Canada and most of the U.S., and countries with four seasons, like Japan, Germany, all of Northern Europe, etc., why do they tend to be more organized, richer, cleaner, more competitive, more technologically advanced, etc., than countries in tropical or subtropical regions? One theory is because tropical countries do not have a winter freeze and therefore can grow their food all year round. And that creates many secondary effects. The more you travel the world, the more you notice things like that. There is a theory, however, that suggests it's because north of the border societies for hundreds of centuries had to labor more, that is, spend more working hours, or as they say, make hay while the sun shines, to be able to survive in the harsh winters. That theory says that northern societies had to plan ahead way more than southern ones. They had to make better tools, better buildings to store their food, had to be able to generate a surplus every year to endure the winter, find ways to protect their animals and preserve food, etc. Reminds me of those children's stories like the three pigs. Remember that one? I'll huff and puff and I'll blow your house down? Then Josh says, there's the people south of the border, like in Mexico, Guatemala, Ecuador, all of Central and South America. Those countries we call third world because they have lower incomes, less technology, fewer inventions, crappier infrastructure, etc. Oddly enough, though, the populations there always had an easier time making ends meet. Plenty of fruits and vegetables all year round. Never had to store up feed for the grazing animals. With four growing seasons, the animals could just forage on their own. No heavy investments in buildings, etc. to store food. Didn't have to store food. What for? It's always available and practically falling off the trees. Which afforded plenty of leisure time for people living south of the border. And thus less need for any kind of technology, especially advanced technology. Makes sense when you consider much of the early north of the border. Breakthrough technologies were in food preservation, storage, and transport. All of which is really not necessary south of the border when food is growing right outside your door. But then again, life is a paradox. People in tropical and subtropical climates always tend to be noticeably poorer than their first world counterparts north of the border who've got hard, cold winters. Though statistically poorer, they have much more idle time on their hands. And because food is so available, there's less stress and anxiety, not only about where the next meal is coming from, but think of this, they have no anxiety at all about the upcoming winter season, because for them, they still have plenty of food. The only difference is they've got more rain. Imagine that scenario going on for thousands of years. That's why people south of the border, with so much time on their hands and so much less anxiety, they tend to smile more, share more time and things with friends and family who have less anxiety and more time on their hands, too. That so-called first world treadmill lots of people talk about does not seem to exist in Latin America. The downside is, though, from a modernist point of view, is that they tend to compete with less intensity than people up north. And in the modern world, competition can be good, very good, but it doesn't seem to make people much happier. In fact, surveys show poorer, less competitive people are happier. So knowing that, the good news is you're free to choose which society fits your soul. If you're a competitive, hard-driving person, maybe you just won't be happy living south of the border, where little things like potholes, mañana time, and broken headlights might really get on your nerves. However, if you have a hard-driving first-world business mentality, and you come to Latin America, it's almost impossible not to succeed. Though you have to wonder if you'll ever be as happy as your dirt-poor maid or gardener. That's the million-dollar question. Just a little food for thought, Johnny. Signed, Josh, in El Salvador. All right, Josh, thanks for that. I think you've got the situation pretty well figured out. You're right. I've seen lots and lots of gringos and expats down here really kick ass in business. I've also noticed lots of gringos and expats who come down are the type that just can't sit still. They just cannot lay in a hammock for 20 minutes doing nothing. They've just got to be texting on Twitter or scrolling through their stupid phones. So you have to sort of conclude that for people who come down to Latin America thinking they're going to be happier and more relaxed, well, there is no guarantees. It's like someone who's just had a heart attack and his doctor advises him to slow way down or he's programmed to get another one. Well, they might slow down for a month or two because they've been scared into it. Though usually soon enough, they're back to their old bad habits again. Now, as for me, I'm that typical old-school type A personality. Latin America did take a little bit of the edge off, and that's a good thing. You know, if you were born and raised in the big city, and you come down to Latin America, and suddenly, every time you look out your window or go out on the front porch, you see a fantastic garden or a jungle or palm trees or the ocean, coffee fields or distant volcanoes, man, does that have a way of calming you. It's a calming effect that could never happen to you looking out your windows in Cleveland, Chicago, or New York. Though I've heard New Yorkers say when you take a walk through Central Park, it's a way to really connect with nature. Well, maybe so, but before you go bragging on it, I suggest you talk to a gringo who's been to Latin America. It ain't the same. It's like black and white versus Technicolor. All right, sticking to pretty much the same subject, here's another email from Carolyn. She says, Dear Johnny, I'm an expat who has lived in both Panama and Ecuador. I'm also not much of a complainer, but I have noticed when expats get together at coffee houses and cafes, they often turn into whining or complaint sessions. Personally, I don't have much patience for negativity. That's one of the reasons I left the United States. Though I've noticed here, when gringos get together, sheesh. When just one person starts in on the country, the people, whatever, the rest of the people sitting around have to one-up him. Sometimes it gets so out of hand, you wonder why any of them moved down in the first place. Almost never does a person sitting in on those sessions play devil's advocate. Talk about all the positive reasons for being here. I guess it's more fun talking shit. I said, Johnny, I'm not a complainer. Having lived in Latin America for the past 7 years, there are things that used to grate on me a lot, but I've grown to accept or ignore them. They're just facts of life here, and complaining won't help. So why expend the effort? Used to be, when I first came down, when someone asked me what I found most difficult to accept as part of life here, my first response would be, that it's culturally acceptable to lie and steal. I'm referring to white lies and petty theft. Nothing serious, but still annoying. Johnny, that's something I would never mention to friends and relatives on my trips back to the United States. If I were to say in front of my family at Thanksgiving dinner, let's say, what I don't like about Latin America is that it's culturally acceptable to lie and steal. They would think I was nuts for living there. That's not the way society works where I grew up in New Jersey. Though, I guess I have to take that back because I understand stealing and looting stores in the U.S. is acceptable now. In Latin America, although stealing may be culturally acceptable, if you get caught, unlike in the U.S., the punishment is severe, sometimes with no holds barred. Anyhow, Johnny, I found that in Ecuador and Panama, at least, it's so culturally acceptable to lie and steal that a bilingual gringo actually told me that his parish priest advised his congregation in a sermon one Sunday not to steal so much. In other words, if you do steal, ratchet it down a bit. Almost sounds like a joke. Can you imagine a pastor in the U.S. saying something like that to his congregation? Johnny, petty stealing is so pervasive. I know gringos who've kept the same maid or gardener on even after they've been caught stealing. Wait a minute. All right, me Johnny here, Carolyn. I've done that. I had a cleaning lady I caught red-handed stealing food. And laundry detergent. How about that? Well, you know, they're all poor trying to make ends meet, so I felt sorry for her. Kept her on. Second time I caught her, though, I thought, no way. When she left that day, I didn't actually fire her to her face. I just said, don't come back next week. I'll call you when I need you. I never called. You longtime listeners probably heard me go into details on that story a long time ago. By the way, that's why when you do hire a maid or cleaning lady, you'll find when she's done with work on the very first day, when you're at the door letting her out, she'll reflexively open up her purse for you to inspect. Now, I have to admit, years ago, when my first cleaning lady did that to me, since I didn't know a lick of Spanish, I really didn't know what she was getting at. I just looked at her in her purse for a couple seconds thinking, what? What's she doing that for? It was something that just never happened to me before in my life. Even way back when I lived up in the States, I had a cleaning lady, one day a week at my house and one day at the office. And I never would have thought to ask her on her way out to open her handbag. Thinking back, that probably would have been a violation of her civil rights or some shit. No doubt she'd have reported me to some f***ed up government agency or something. So anyway, you gringos and expats, gonna-bes and wannabes, don't be surprised when it happens to you. And look, not everyone who works for you is going to steal. No way. Just know that it seems to have happened to every single gringo or expat I've ever met. Though I'll never forget the first time I caught my maintenance guy stealing, long time ago, when I was down in Costa Rica, many years ago. Turns out he stole a portable radio from me. It was so obvious, too, because he was the only one in the garage that day. And later that day when I called him on it, because I knew it was him, he didn't even deny it. He fessed up with an actual justification story. He said, look, I was thinking, you have two radios. I have none. And you can only listen to one at a time. So I guess he figured my second radio was redundant. I was radio rich, overburdened with them. So he figured he'd just relieve me of one and I wouldn't care. Well, I fired him, but in the end, he still clung to that twisted version of a story. And by the sincerity of his answer, apparently he believed it, too. Hey, at least he didn't lie, right? You know, I often wonder, too, since Latin America is so Christian, mostly Catholic. And, you know, Catholics are required to go to confession once in a while. And even if you're Catholic and you rarely go to Mass, usually wayward Catholics will have a guilt streak around Christmas and drag themselves into the confessional that one time a year. So I'm thinking here in Latin America, with all the lies and petty thieving going on, that priest in the confessional is certainly getting himself an earful. Or maybe not. Maybe Catholic sinners here in Latin America do what Catholic sinners do up in the States. Lie once again to the priest in the confessional. You Catholics hearing this now, you know what I'm talking about. Those little sins like swearing or talking back to your parents go down well in the confession. Big sins, like stealing or watching porn, not so much. But I digress as usual. Man, did I digress. All right, then Carolyn says in her email, Johnny, as for lying Latinos, the nicest way I can put it is locals will tell you what you want to hear. Latinos are non-confrontational, so if a lie sounds better, on the chance that you buy it, and it keeps things rolling smoothly, they figure it would be better than telling a harsh truth that will ruffle feathers. Then Carolyn says, that mañana thing I can endure. But your new Latino friends, if they don't show up or call, it doesn't bode well for enduring, lasting relationships. Where I come from, that's not how you make friends. How long would you put up with a so-called friend who rarely showed up or called when previous arrangements and promises had been made? In my book, you avoid people like that. But that's the culture in Latin America. Even if you're aware things like that happen with middle-class mechanics, Uber drivers, or people you meet at the gym or a coffee shop, unfortunately, it even happens with professionals, doctors, university professors, lawyers, and businessmen. My advice, if you want to make local friends, you have to overlook those defects. You must realize, first of all, it's not intentional. They're not trying to sabotage the relationship. It's just the culture. But realize, too, that you will never be all that close to them. And unless your Spanish is very good, you'll never completely mesh with your friends' extended families. And you'll always be viewed as someone who's got a huge bank account, even when you tell them directly you're not wealthy. And that will come up. Someone will mention or refer to you as a rich gringo or gringa right in your face with regularity. I find that Latinos often like to slip that little nugget in general conversation. She says, for me, it was a sad realization that I will forever be viewed as someone who has a huge bank account. Even though I don't, far from it, I accept the fact that I'm rich in the minds of others. I accept that I'm a millionaire, in Mexican pesos anyway. Oh, and the more you deny it, the more you appear like a rich person displaying false humility. Either way, you can't win. After having said all that, Johnny, even so, I never want to return to my old life in New Jersey. If I were to list the pluses and minus points for living in Latin America, the plus column still vastly outweighs the minus column. There's no contest. Signed, Carolyn. All right, thanks for that, Carolyn. And speaking of Ecuador, you did say you live part-time in Panama, part-time in Ecuador, right? You know, some crazy things have been happening in Ecuador. You heard me say in a show probably 4 or 5 months ago now, in a run-up to the last presidential election, one of the top candidates in the mix was assassinated, which, as you know, if you listen to this show, happens all the time. It seems like in every Latin American country. When there's a run-up to a big election, especially a presidential election, a candidate or two or three get bumped off. Usually a couple of mayoral candidates get bumped off, too. In fact, the country that holds the world record for the most political assassinations is, guess who? Mexico. Surprise, surprise. Now, according to the most recent stats, 88 Mexican politicians were killed in 2020. And 100 Mexican politicians were assassinated in the run-up to the 2021 elections. But that's not even the whole story. In 2021, there were 581 attacks on politicians in Mexico. And get this, 162 attempted political assassinations during the very last week of political campaigning. You know, to some cynical people, that would be good news, right? That's why I have to laugh when people are up in arms about Guatemala's situation right now. You know, they've had 2 or 3 weeks of roadblocks and picketing due to election tampering and fraud accusations, etc. Well, you know, Guatemala's a country of, what, 18 million people. You know how many people have died during those protests? Try one. And sadly, it wasn't a politician, just a bystander. Man, I keep telling people this kind of thing happens every election cycle. If you've been down here as long as I have, over 30 years now, this stuff happens in every Latin country during every election cycle. Politicians make promises, they lie, they say they're going to clean the swamp, they don't do it. The people have short memories, they get excited, they head out to vote. There's election fraud and a new bunch of corrupt assholes get in, with, by the way, the U.S. and its alphabet agencies having their dirty little fingers stirring the pot too. Anyway, these things pretty much always end the same way. Another group of lard-ass corrupt dickheads comes into power. A bunch of thieves from the old regime go to jail or become millionaire fugitives on the run in other countries, along with their stolen booty. And the net result, as far as all the gringos and expats living in that country? Nothing. No change at all. Though some inconvenience during those weeks when the natives are restless. Because with roadblocks and such, it ain't business as usual in the stores and the traffic. Well, with roadblocks, it absolutely sucks. It's best to stay home till it blows over. Anyway, by contrast, I just wanted to mention that in Mexico's latest election, in the last big run-up, there have been 581 attempted assassinations of politicians, with about 100 success stories. I always like a success story, don't you? It's kind of funny, too, that for a lot of you, this just might be the very first time you've heard stories like this. You know why that stuff gets little or no publicity? Because it happens so frequently, it ain't news. Just politics as usual. Anyway, I started this rant by saying there's something unusual about Ecuador. Yeah, it's not unusual that a couple months ago, one of the presidential candidates got bumped off. That's Latin American politics as usual. What is unusual is that somehow they caught the six guys that were in on the plot. Turns out all six were Colombians tied to a Colombian narco drug running gang. Which still might not be all that surprising to you. But this might be the fact that all six of them, while being held in an Ecuadorian prison waiting for trial, were bumped off in their cells. All six dead. So is this the first time you heard that news? Well, like I said, down here it's almost no news at all. Now, you know me. I like to mix in the sad with the happy, right? The good, the bad, the ugly, and the great. So, on a lighter note, since we were talking about Ecuador, comes this article from the local news service, El Mercurio, the Mercury. It says, autopsies are being conducted on the bodies of two men beaten and burned by an angry crowd Saturday night in La Mana in the Cotopaxi province of Ecuador. According to local residents, the men were extortionists who'd been threatening local businesses. Police say the two men, who they identified as residents of Guayaquil, were surrounded by a crowd who beat them before dousing them with gasoline and setting them on fire. A third man was badly beaten and burned and is being treated at the local hospital in Ambato. Turns out when the police arrived, late as usual, when they attempted to stop the attack, they were driven back by a crowd estimated to number 1,000. Two police vehicles were badly damaged in the altercation as they tried to stop the angry locals from exacting their vigilante justice. Yes, folks, I guess you could say that would be Ecuador's version of defund the police. Think about it. When the police are defunded to the point of uselessness, people finally get pissed off enough to take the law in their own hand. It might not be the best solution, but it is a solution. And under the circumstances, what's not to like about that? Or not. Just saying. By the way, I've gotten emails from people saying, Johnny, occasionally you read stories about vigilante justice. I'm full on with having a plan B and getting out of Dodge, but I really don't want to relocate to a place or neighborhood where I have to witness that kind of stuff. That's pretty scary stuff for a pasty, middle-aged guy like me who's never even been in a fist fight. Yep, you know, it seems every time I tell one of those vigilante stories, I get a small batch of emails with those kind of sentiments. Well, let me explain something. Nearly every single one of those vigilante incidents that I've run across happen in very small towns way out in the boonies, places where gringos and expats just don't live, mostly because they're way too far away from the big cities and the conveniences of a big city like Walmart and Costco and all that. In fact, I've never personally spoken to any gringo or expat or even heard a story from a gringo who says he knew a gringo who knew a gringo who happened to have been a witness to one of those vigilante incidents. So, I wouldn't let that kind of stuff worry you, or deter you from pushing on with that plan B. Though it does beg the question, are there vigilante attacks in the big cities? You know, where gringos and expats just might live? Well, not overtly. Fact is, the big and medium-sized cities, you never hear about a thief getting caught, beat to shit on the street, doused with gas, and torched. The big, medium, even small cities here in Latin America are much more civilized than that. But I have to admit, I've heard of certain kinds of stealthy vigilante justice going down in the big cities that could be going on right under our noses and we'd never even know about it. For example, I know of a delivery guy, an Uber Eats guy. You know what I'm talking about? Where you order something from a restaurant and a guy comes in a motorcycle. Well, I'm not one of these guys who gets delivery from restaurants. But that's a huge thing here in Latin America. And when you order something like that, it always comes delivered by a guy on a motorcycle. You know, one of those irritating cucarachas of the road. Anyway, when you live in a city, you see these guys everywhere. Pretty annoying, actually. So anyway, I know this girl whose brother is one of those road cucarachas. He delivers for Uber Eats. She told me he got his motorcycle stolen. Turns out he got set up. Someone ordered Uber Eats. He went to the house. Two guys ambushed him, stole his motorcycle. Of course, he reported it to the cops. It was a waste of time. Worse yet, this kid who got his motorcycle stolen was still making payments on it, so he was kind of ruined. But you see, what we didn't know, I didn't know at least, those Uber Eats guys and the other delivery motorcycle guys are kind of an unofficial union. They all know and sort of help and protect each other. In fact, about 25 of the other Uber Eats guys chipped in and bought him a motorcycle, or at least the down payment, so he could get another one. But here's the thing. Turns out they also went through the neighborhood where he got robbed and asked people if anybody had cameras. Turns out one of the neighbors across the street from the crime caught it on her cell phone. Well, as it turns out, they sent that little video off to 50 or 100 Uber Eats guys. And someone happened to recognize those two thieves. The next day, they both ended up in one of the emergency rooms with concussions and multiple leg fractures. Now, the motorcycle wasn't recovered. That would be too much to ask. When those things get stolen, in a couple hours, they're long gone. Sold or dismantled for parts, whatever. But those two guys will think twice before stealing a motorcycle, or at least they'll have to wait a few months till their bones heal. So there you have it, a little case of stealthy vigilante justice because the cops are useless. The only thing was, they didn't exact their revenge for all to see. They didn't beat the shit out of him in the town square, douse him with gas, and torch him. They just found him and broke their legs. So anyway, all's well that ends well. You know, I'm a sentimental kind of guy. A sucker for happy endings. How about you?
South of the border. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.